Hello, and welcome to the Lives of Women in History. My name is April Rogers. Hello, and welcome back to the Lives of Women in History. Today we're on part 3 of Belle Starr. Now, in this part, we're going to start seeing what becomes the legend of Belle Starr start to take shape. Remember, it's just after the murder of the two Shannon boys, so Jim Reed is hiding out in Indian Territory, while Belle and their daughter Pearl are on the Shirley Ranch in Syene, hoping to escape the constant fear for his life in Indian Territory. Jim Reed decides that he needs to take Belle and Pearl to California. That's where he hopes that he can start a new life with his family. So Jim arranges for Belle and Pearl to travel across country by stagecoach while he rides out there on horseback. They meet in Los Angeles, and for a while, they enjoy some peace and happiness and live an ordinary life free from the law. So 1871 rolls around, and they're in California. Belle and Jim Reed have a son. They named the child Edwin, after Belle's younger brother, Edwin Benton Shirley, who was killed near Dallas in 1870 when he was just 20 years old. Belle and Jim settle into life in a town called Los Nitos. It's located on the San Gabriel River. It's just to the east of Los Angeles. And in a letter that Belle sends home to Jim Reed's favorite brother, Marion, she describes Los Nitos as an island. Now, since it's not an island, it's pretty safe to assume it was a fertile farming area that was surrounded by rivers. Belle often commented throughout her life that the short time she was in California with Jim and her children, Rose, Pearl, and Edwin, were the happiest times of her life. So she writes this letter to Marion Reed in Missouri. And the letter clearly indicates that Belle's extremely happy in California. Now, at the time it was written, she appeared to be planning on spending her life there. The letter, with all its grammatical inconsistencies, reads as follows. Dear Brother Marion, I take my pen in hand to write you a few lines this morning. We are all enjoying the best of health. Indeed, it is a rare thing for anyone to be sick in this country. Marion, we have received but 2 letters from home in a long time, and they were old. Oh, so old. I guess they had been written 2 or 3 months. I presume you would like to hear how we have been getting along lately. When we left San Bernardino, we rented a place in Los Nitos. Los Nitos is an island, as is said to be the best location in California. We then rented the place to a gentleman by the name of Wolf. He gave us $130 for possession. Jimmy has bought land here on the island, and I guess we will make a permanent home here. I am perfectly satisfied. I think in a few years we can have as a lovely place as this state can boast of. We don't care about it never rains. We have the heart of on raising everything we wish to, as we have plenty of irrigating water. Jimmy's going to put out an orchard, the first thing, and then vineyard. You never seen such corn that grows here. It beats any land to produce ever seen. Marion, Jimmy is very anxious for you to come here. He paid $30 an acre for our land, and he is compelled to raise $400 next month. It would confer a great favor on us if you could collect what is coming to us back there and come out here. Hayes wrote to us that you had an idea of going to Texas. Do no such thing. Come here, Marion, and if you don't like it, you shall lose nothing by it. Jimmy is gathering corn and wanted me to write a letter and have it for him to take to the P.O. when he came in. Jimmy says, tell you to make it by Christmas anyhow. I want you to be sure and take dinner with us on Christmas Day. I would not knowingly misrepresent things to you. Jimmy thinks you could do well here, and we would both be pleased to have you come. Crest wrote that he was coming out here, but I guess it was more talk than anything else. I have wrote to Amanda, Sally, your ma, and Aunt Letty since I got a letter. I intend to quit writing. Do you blame me? Old Phillips, the old cuss, never considered to write us a line. Jimmy wrote him a severe letter last night. I guess he thinks Jimmy won't come back there soon. He might be disagreeably surprised some day when we get our land all paid for. We will ask the world no else. Oh, Marion, an orange grove is so pretty. Rosie sends her love to all. I haven't written depressed yet. She often talks of her doll Uncle Marion gave her. She knows her letters and can say the whole alphabet. She has got a little set of dishes and three dolls, a ball and two hoops and a steel whistle. I will send Timma one of her little saucers. The baby is not very well. He's teething and looks very pale this morning. Write soon, Marion, and give us all the news. Give my love to all, and I want them all to write soon and often. In haste, May. Now, Jim Reed wrote the following note on the bottom of the letter that Belle was writing. Marion, I've written to you some time ago and have not received any answer yet. I want you to write as soon as you get this talk and business. I have bought 47 acres of land, and I have one payment to make. The first of in January, which is $400. I've got 200 in hand and stock that will bring it if I can get that. What is back there, Marion? This is a good country, and I am sure you can do well here. The climate is good. I know you can't like it. This is good. Now, the dreams that Belle and Jim Reed had for their new California home were pretty quickly going to be shattered. Reed was recognized by California law enforcement authorities, and he found it necessary to flee California for the safety of Indian Territory. Belle and the two children, they returned to Texas by ship around Cape Horn. All right, back in Texas, Belle resumed her activity as a horse dealer and a saloon entertainer around Dallas. So she'd often ride into Indian Territory for secret rendezvous with Jim Reed. That's where she first met Cherokee leaders Sam and Tom Starr, who were known horse thieves. It's 1873, and three masked men raided the cabin of Walt Grayson. He was a wealthy Creek Indian who had stolen a large sum of money from the Creek tribal funds. The party tied ropes around the necks of Grayson and his wife and threatened to hang them if they didn't tell where they hid the $30,000 in gold. They raised and lowered Grayson seven times and his wife three times until they finally told where the gold was hidden. Jim Reed was recognized as being one of the robbers, and soon after this robbery, Belle Reed turned up in Dallas with a fine new string of racehorses. Since it was generally known that Jim Reed was Belle's husband, stories started to circulate around Dallas about Belle, dressed like a man, also being with the party that robbed Grayson. These stories about this unusual woman who wore two pistols as she rode along Dallas streets were not uncommon. But it is extremely doubtful that Belle participated in this robbery with her outlaw husband. There's actually no evidence to substantiate that she ever took part in any robbery for that matter. Now, tales of Belle being involved in robberies were purely folklore, which Dallas citizens created about her, and they contributed to the trouble Belle began having in Dallas and around her home in Syene. No evidence exists to indicate that Belle Shirley ever had any association with Jim Reed's illegal activities while in Dallas, other than possibly sometimes selling horses of questionable ownership through her livery stable. So Jim Reed remains a highly sought after man for the murder of the two Shannons in Arkansas and for the Walt Grayson robbery. So on April 7th, 1874, Jim Reed was once again recognized in a robbery, this time as one of the leaders of a gang that held up the San Antonio-Austin mail coach. Again, stories begin circulating that Belle is dressed in men's attire, also participated with her husband in that robbery, but there's no evidence to support that story either. So Belle prided herself as being an honest businesswoman and a lady. The simple fact that she was the wife of one of the country's most sought-after outlaws began to cause her and the Shirley family a lot of problems, especially around Dallas and Syene. Belle's brother Edwin, he'd been accused of horse theft, and he was killed in a gunfight with lawmen in Dallas in 1870. Even Judge Shirley had been arrested without reason on several occasions, simply because that his daughter was married to an outlaw and that men of questionable character would often stay at the Shirley's boarding house in Syene. Things started to grow worse for Belle. She became really irritated with the women neighbors, and she suspected that they were responsible for the bad reputation being created about her. She began writing threatening letters to these women, stating that if their bitter tongues did not quit, she would see to it that some of her outlaw friends burned them out. Well, yeah, that's not going to help, but in Belle's eyes, that's what she needed to do. It's April 28th, 1875. A Dallas grand jury indicts Belle Reed for arson. They accuse Belle of burning a store owned by Nanny Reed, whom Belle had threatened on several occasions, and a district judge named Barksdale set her bail at $2,500. Now, this was felt to be a most unreasonable amount. Even a Dallas news reporter stated in his article about the incident that this sum of money was extremely excessive for these particular charges. It's August 12, 1875. The Dallas grand jury charges Belle and Mike McComas with theft of a gilding, and this time Belle is jailed. Stories of Belle encouraging the jailer to become her lover and run away with her have been told by past historians and writers, and Belle was quickly released, and soon after, the embarrassed jailer returned to his wife, but no longer with a job. But again, those are just stories. It's August 6, 1874. Jim Reed is riding back to Indian Territory after he's had a secret rendezvous with Belle in Dallas. He's riding with a man named John Morris. Jim and John are friends, and Jim trusted John. So John Morris, he wants the reward that is out there for Reed. It's now in excess of $5,000. So he has carefully planned and waited for just the right opportunity to bring Jim Reed down. As they near a farmhouse in Paris, Texas, John Morris suggests that they stop by for dinner and rest with the farmer, whom John Morris knows. Okay, so the farmer objected to firearms being brought into his home. At least that's what's told to Jim Reed by Morris. So Morris and Reed remove their gun belts, they hang them on their saddles, and they enter the farmhouse. Now, John Morris pretended he was going to the well to get water for the farmer's wife, but he returns to the house with his weapon, and he shoots and kills the unarmed Jim Reed in the farmer's house. Reed's body is taken to McKinney, Texas, where Morris hopes to collect the reward. But before the reward can be paid, authorities need a positive identification of Reed's body, and so they sent for Belle. She arrives in McKinney. Belle looks at the body and tells Morris and the law authorities, "If you want the reward for Jim Reed, you'll have to kill Jim Reed. This is not my husband." Now, obviously, the disappointed Morris did not receive this reward, and Jim Reed's body was buried in a potter's field near McKinney in an unmarked grave. A few months later, John Morris was killed by an unknown party. It's June 20th, 1876. Belle is standing trial on the arson charges. She pleads not guilty. That was the verdict, since there was a lack of evidence, the horse theft charges were also dropped in the same trial. Citizens in Dallas and Syene are concerned, and they're determined to run Belle Reed out of town. So they keep up their pressure on the authorities. In March 1875, a group of Syene leaders formed a committee to seek ways of removing Belle and the outlaw friends who frequented the Shirley's premises from their city. The following letter was sent to Texas Governor Richard Koch. Dear Governor Koch, for several years past, the town of Syene, Dallas County, Texas, and vicinity has been noted as a place of resort for horse thieves, desperados, and other bad characters. Certain parties having located themselves here as a place of rendezvous for such characters, thus giving aid and comfort to thieving and marauding bandits infesting all parts of the state. Here is the home of the widow and family of James Reed, the San Antonio mail robber, his widow being no less celebrated in such exploits than her notorious paramour. Here the robber and outlaw himself made his home and sought refuge while resting from his daring and infamous robberies and murders. Here Porter and the youngest brothers, whose names have since become synonymous of infamy throughout the length and breadth of the land, for a time rested secure. Here was murdered Colonel Nichols, a deputy sheriff of this county, and Mr. McMahon, one of his posse, while attempting to arrest Porter and John Younger. Here, for a time, was the headquarters of the notorious desperado Hayes, alias Parker, who shot off Judge Hart's arm and murdered in cold blood James Loving, a peaceable citizen of Dallas County. Here, the robber and desperado Wilder, who now lies in prison at Fort Smith, rested while he concocted his infamous plans. For such characters, the latch string of the home of this family has ever hung out, and as courier, and if need be, co-worker of the band, she, Mrs. Reed, has done them good service. Donning often male attire, she has ridden hundreds of miles to apprise them of pending danger. Quite recently, she was threatened to burn out. Anyone who proposed to interfere with her nefarious plans, and states in a threatening letter to one of our citizens that she has 25 men who will do her bidding and annihilate Syene if necessary. Thus have they conducted themselves until they have become a terror to the citizens of the county at large, and the citizens of Syene have been driven to the necessity of organizing and banding themselves together to aid each other in protecting their lives and property, and to aid the officers of the law in arresting and bringing to justice all offenders against the law, and by their vigilance to obtain and convey to the proper authorities all infractions of the law, as well as to collect and present the evidence in such cases, thus aiding to bring to the bar of justice the parties who have so long preyed upon us. In doing this, the citizens are desirous of being assured that they are doing nothing contrary to the laws of the state, and that they have the sympathy of the officials of the state in what they consider a laudable undertaking. With this view, we, the undersigned, have been selected as a committee to confer with Your Excellency and ask your aid and advice. We have been led to adopt this course from a feeling sense of the responsibility resting upon us as good citizens and law-abiding men, having in view not only the good of the county, but of the whole state. In Your Excellency's message to the 14th Legislature, on pages 15 to 18 inclusive, we have noticed certain recommendations in regards to such means as you deem most expedient to preserve the peace and quietude as well as the dignity of our state, which meets with our approbation. And while we do not ask either pay or substance from the state, except in such actual expenditures as may be inquired in pursuing thieves and desperados for their capture and arrest, we desire the approbation of the executive of the state in our proceedings. We propose to act only as law-abiding men and good citizens, and to go only where the laws of the land will protect us, and in no wise to take the law into our own hands. Since our organization, we have arrested and turned over to the proper authorities some half a dozen or more offenders, two of whom are charged with horse stealing. We forward you herewith the certificate of our county officials certifying to our standing as citizens of Dallas County, and ask that you take the matter into consideration and give us an early answer. Now, Governor Koch certainly was sympathetic to the committee's plight, but he was hampered by limited state resources and responded with a very non-committal reply. He reminded the group of the importance of staying within the law. It was a change in priorities from Indians to outlaws for the state police was still a few years away. Bell's father, Judge Shirley, he died on June 19, 1876. Eliza Shirley continued to live in Syene until her financial resources were exhausted, and for the last 2 years of her life, she existed on the charity of the Floyd Street Methodist Episcopal Church congregation. At the time of her death, January 4, 1894, Eliza was living with Mrs. Charlotte T. Poynier at 636 Pacific Avenue in Dallas. All of her children, with the exception of her oldest daughter, Charlotte, in Mexico, had preceded her in death. Eliza was buried in the Trinity Cemetery, later renamed Greenwood Cemetery in Dallas. And Bell finally succumbed to the years of pressure and harassment of her family by her Texas neighbors. It's late 1876. She leaves Syene. She sends her two children, Pearl and Eddie, to live with their grandmother Reed in Missouri, and Belle goes to Kansas.
Thank you for joining me for another episode of The Lives of Women in History. Please consider sharing with your friends and family and leaving a review. You can send me a message at womensettlers@gmail.com, or if you use the Anchor app, you can send me a voicemail. See you next week.